Mike Scott of the Water Boys.
And we're here to talk about...
An appointment with Mr. Yeats.
Why is it called Appointment with Mr. Yeats?
He has a poem called The Appointment. And some years ago I bought a cassette of Yeats' interpretation set to music by an Irish singer called Marie O'Neill. And she titled it An Appointment with W.B. Yeats. And I thought that was such a great title. And when I came to do my own show, I wrote to her and said, can I use a variation of your title? And she said, okay.
You wrote Stolen Child, which is a Yeats, put it to music, yeah. in the 80s, I guess, yeah? So now 20 years on, we have this kind of whole, full-fledged Yeatsian performance. Why now? And why Yeats? What was it about Yeats that kind of attracted you?
I grew up in a house full of books, and I found Yeats on my mother's bookshelves. In fact, my mother actually took me to the Yeats Summer School in Sligo, Ireland, when I was 11. She was attending all the lectures. Some years later, when I was old enough really to appreciate Yeats, I came back to him and started reading his poetry seriously. I loved what I read, and I did notice that because he rhymes and he scans often, that his poems lent themselves to being set to music. The first one I did was The Stolen Child, where I put the chorus into a sung melody and had the verses recited. But in years after that, I began to take Yeats's poems and turn them actually into complete songs. No recitation, all sung with melody. And I've done that on and off for about 25 years. And slowly I've built up a collection of Yeats interpretations. I've done about 36 now, and there are 20 of them in the Appointment with Mr. Yeats show.
What's the process like in terms of turning a poem into a song? Because it's, obviously poems are quite, you know, especially Yeats, metrical, rhythmic, there's rhyme schemes, but you do have to mess around a lot with the kind of the mechanism of the poem, repeat verses, you know, create a chorus out of things. Was that difficult? Was that challenging for you to do? And did you ever feel like you were being disloyal to the poem in any way? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a central dynamic of working with poems and turning them into songs. Fortunately, with Yeats, he would often put choruses in. For example, The Stolen Child, Come Away, Human Child, to the Water, which repeats after every verse. So he makes it relatively easy for a songwriter to adapt. But sometimes when a poem doesn't have a chorus, or perhaps the internal rhyming scheme doesn't work well on the ear when set to music. For example, Yeats, in The Lake Isle of Innisfree, he uses an ABBA rhyming scheme, which means that the first and fourth lines rhyme and the second and third lines rhyme. When you put that to music, it doesn't sound good. The ear doesn't like it. So what I did was I flipped them so that it was ABAB, and it still makes sense. It's ever so slightly more surreal sense, but with the form of music that I set the poem to, which was blues, that worked. So there's an available magic there, and if one's lucky, one can plug into it.
Did you ever feel that you were being too bold, or did you worry that fans of Yeats or the kind of illiterati would criticize you for this? And was this a concern, or did you just think, you know, I know as a musician this sounds better, I'm allowed to do this? And did you ask permission or anything from the Yeats estates or anything like that?
Okay, well, I deploy my own sense of values, and I'm very conscious that the big no-no is to alter the intention of the poet. I will never change something in Yeats's poems that alters his meaning or his intention. As long as I comply with that directive, it seems to me fair game to change a word or to change a rhyme or to subtly alter things for the sake of the music. And I will do that. And I don't give two hoots what the literati think or what anyone else thinks, because I take myself seriously as a songwriter and believe that I'm the right guy for the job, and that what I do is properly sensitive and appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, as a writer, you know, I often end up editing other people's works and things like that, and you have to invest yourself in the other person's poem in order to understand it, and there's a sensitivity to that, but you also have to understand that, I guess, you know what's right for the piece in general, I guess. Yeah. Is it that kind of encapsulates that?
Well, I feel I'm tuned into the poem. When I'm setting Yeats to music, I'm tuned into the poem. I'm very absorbed in the poem. And I've got a kind of inner connection with the genius of the poem. And everything that I do in the writing comes from that. And I also have my own inner emotional response to the poem. Now, I may not know exactly what was in Yeats's mind when he wrote the poem, but I will know what the poem triggers in me, or what arises in me as a response, and I'll work with that. That's my emotional fire, my emotional store, or my emotional information as regards the poem. And I will inhabit the poem, therefore, and work from that.
That's a very essential thing, I think, to be able to do, and just in your own, as well as your own work, as well as when you're dealing with somebody else's stuff, you have to know what the song is saying, the poem is saying. In terms of like this emotional response that you got from Yeats's work, I'm interested in the three dozen or so poems that you've chosen, the ones that you've chosen to perform, and what will eventually make an album. Were you picking ones that you thought were really famous, that deserved things? Were you picking ones that had a core emotional response to you, ones that you thought maybe hadn't been read very frequently? Are they just ones that you kind of had a visceral response to, or are you trying to build something? You know, in the press release, they call it a suite. Are you trying to build something larger? Is there something grander you're trying to say by putting these poems in sequence with each other?
Well, I am glad and relieved to inform you that none of that has been in my mind at all. I've made my job much easier than that. What I do is I put the book of poems on the piano, and I go through it from poem one, page one, and if the first line of the poem suggests a melody in my mind, I will work with that poem. And it doesn't matter whether it's a favourite, or whether I like it or not, or whether I think it's overlooked or too popular. I just don't think of any of that. I just work with the ones that suggest music. And that keeps it clear. You know, it allows it to be more organic that way, I think.
I don't know how many Yeats poems there are out there.
600 or so.
And did you try this with 600 poems?
Yeah, I've been through the whole poetry book dozens of times. Yeah.
Yeah, no wonder it took 20 years to do this.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe Dickinson will be next.
I don't think I'm going to do this with anyone else. It's Yeats I've got the relationship with.
And why is it? Why? I mean, I guess earlier I kind of generally hinted at this. Why Yeats? Why not? Why not Burns? I mean, you grew up in Scotland, I guess, yeah.
But there's a very easy answer to that. I do love Robert Burns, and I honour him. I'm so proud of him as Scotland's national poet, and he's written poems that are deservedly known throughout the world. He's a world-class poet, the equal of Yeats, absolutely. But he wrote in Scots, which is a vernacular that I don't find easy to set to music, and it's just never going to happen between me and Robbie Burns because of that. Yeats writes, he's a more modern poet, and he writes in a language that is still generally current, and I find it easy to work with him. It suggests music in my mind in a way that Burns doesn't.
In this relationship that you've had working with Yeats, has that influenced your own writing, your own lyric?
I actually used a line from Yeats, a quote from Yeats, in an old song of mine called Old England, but that was before I ever set him to music. Since working with him, I'm sure there must have been an influence, but I'm not consciously aware of it. I've never thought about it.
I mean, it's just an interesting thing. I mean, because you've also written for the Let's Get Lyrical campaign, a little piece on Bob Dylan and things, and I imagine, is that... Has Dylan's work influenced you at all?
Hugely. I my teenage years were spent listening to Bob, and I learned more from him about rhyme and structure than anyone else.
And what is it about Bob that attracts you to his work? And how do you mean rhyme and structure? I mean, his rhymes are crazy.
I didn't mean rhyming structure. I meant more the songwriting structure.
Okay.
Well, I don't know what attracts anyone to anyone. I just liked Bob. An older friend of mine played me Blonde on Blonde when I was 12 years old, and I loved it. Who knows why? But Dylan's structure, fascinating structure, like a song like Visions of Johanna, where he'll use the same rhyme five or six times in a row. I love that. And there are no rules in Dylan's work. He plays with structure constantly, and I love that. And he will write songs that don't have a chorus. All Along a Watchtower, one of his great classics, no chorus.
Didn't actually realize that until you said it.
Yeah, of course.
3 8-line verses, which is a structure that I've used often myself, and without consciously doing so, I got it from All Along the Watchtower.
I mean, I think that's a really interesting thing, that kind of the things you take or refer back to, but also as a writer, you know, there's poets I really admire, and I'll sit down to try to emulate that, and I'll fail Totally. Do you know what I mean? Do you sit down and try to emulate any of the people like Dylan and stuff? And where do you think you succeed and where do you think you don't quite hit it? Does that make sense?
I'm not in the business of emulating. I tried to emulate Dylan when I was 13 years old and was doing my first terrible attempts at songs, but it doesn't work. Yeah, sometimes I see someone rewriting one of my songs. Yeah, I've noticed that a few times. I just think it's such a bad thing to do to try and rewrite other people's work.
I was reading a book recently. It was about some of the jazz greats, and you know, and they were saying that, like, you know, in trying to emulate the sound of Coltrane, you know, people found their own. Oh, they found their own voice. I guess that's kind of what I'm getting at in that sort of notion of
dealing with Woody Guthrie. Yeah, it's a sing like him until you find your own. Yeah, I suppose so. Well, I certainly sang like Bob when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about, like, kind of just the process of writing lyrics, because it's a lyrical campaign. Do you ever find yourself with a great lyric, but you struggle to find the music for it? Do you ever feel... How much do you play with the music to make sure that it does suit what the song is trying to say, what the lyrics are trying to say in your work? Is that a lengthy process or sometimes frustrating process, or do you feel that it's quite... organic and natural?
That's a lot of questions.
It's probably way too many. You can pick one or half of one or just talk about anything else.
Okay. I find lyrics require more work than music. Generally, if I've got a lyric, the music comes almost automatically and there's less thought process involved. I'm more likely to have to work and fight to get a lyric right than the music.
Does that mean
music just comes semi-automatically?
The words are terrifying.
No, there's nothing terrifying about the words, but they're from different parts of the being. Words are from the mind, informed by emotion, certainly, but they're sculpted by mind. Music doesn't come from mind. Music comes from some mysterious place which I can't quite identify, but I know that when I'm songwriting... the music comes, as I say, semi-automatically. Now, I will sculpt it a bit, I will make some choices, but the core of it, the core melodies and chords will come from an unconscious place. Whereas lyrics, while there will be an unconscious element of things just kind of popping into my mind as if by magic, the main part of the work in writing a lyric for me is a deployment of my mind as an instrument of creating the lyric. So that for me, lyrics and music are made by entirely different departments.
Do you resent ever having to put lyrics to a piece of music? And is that part of a struggle? Or do you just think they have to? If it's a song, it's a song. I have to write lyrics for this. It's a great piece of music. Yeah, okay, I have to write something. I owe it to the song to do it.
I find it very difficult to put lyrics to a piece of otherwise finished music. Usually I will begin with a line of lyric or a couple of lines of lyric, or maybe a few chords, and then some lyrics will pop into my mind, and I'll create the two in tandem. But actually putting a lyric to a finished piece of music, that's very rare for me.
So they're kind of both working together at the same time.
One to inform the other.
Do you think lyrics are poetry? It is a big kind of grandiose question, but I guess it gets asked a lot, you know, especially from our point of view as a poet and working for the Scottish Poetry Library. You know, people, oh yeah, my favorite poet would be Bob Dylan, sometimes people say, or, you know, they want to believe that songs and songwriting is poetry. What's your view on it?
As someone who spent my life as a songwriter, I would say strongly that song lyrics are not poetry. The two are very different. If you take Dylan's lyrics, even some of his greatest lyrics, like It's All Right Ma, I'm Only Bleeding, and you put them on the page and read them as poetry, no, they don't work. They work with the music. And they can still be impressive on the page, and lines will jump out, and you may think, what a wonderful statement, what a wonderful sentiment. But they don't stand as poems, no.
They don't. I was just reading your essay on that piece, and yeah, I was just reading. You know, you can't hear the growl. You know, you can't hear that very visceral feeling of even the President of the United States sometimes has to stand naked. That pure fury that's in that line. Yeah, it just doesn't hit. You know, the music and his voice and his vocalization is so important in that. What do you think separates the two between poetry and lyrics? Is there a separation? And is it something that, as a songwriter or as a poet, that we should be worried about? Or do you think this question is sort of purely academic?
I think the difference between song lyrics and poetry is the fact that one's written for music and one isn't. When I have written poetry, I'm not thinking music. I'm thinking about how it will read in the reader's mind. The instrument of transmission is the reader's internal voice. And I'm sculpting the poem so that it will land in the most potent way possible in the reader's internal voice. When I write a song lyric, I'm writing it with music and I'm landing it in the reader's mind as a finished thing. They're not going to be reading it internally, they're going to be receiving it. It's more passive. Poetry is a more active medium to receive because you're bringing something to it, you're bringing your own internal voice. Whereas songwriting, you're delivering something that's complete. To me, the results of those two different processes are entirely different. I'm a songwriter. I'm not a poet. I'm not a good poet. I'm a good songwriter.
I mean, we talked a bit about Dylan, but like other lyricists that you just would think, top five, is that a ridiculous question to ask?
Leonard Cohen, Lennon at his best, Chuck Berry, Joni Mitchell, Paul Simon at his best, which means I don't think all of his stuff is consistently great.
He's got a lot of records, though. Yeah. He just put a new one out, right?
Did he?
I think so.
The one with Eno a couple of years ago. Cohen and Dylan are the best too. Chuck Berry as well.
Chuck Berry? That's just a strange choice to me.
Oh, no, not at all.
Go on.
One of the first great rock lyricists.
Give me, what one? Is Maybelline Chuck Berry?
Maybelline, yeah. Brown Eyed Handsome Man, Back in the USA. Hail, hail, rock and roll, deliver me from the days of old. His poetry around cars.
I've never...
A huge influence on Dylan.
Really?
Yeah.
I did...
Absolutely. Subterranean Homesick Blues, totally Chuck Berry. Dylan's rock ticker tape lyrics is a Chuck Berry influence.
Is that riffing on just all of the work of Chuck Berry? Or is it a specific thing, that kind of ticker tape thing?
No, all of Chuck Berry's rock classics.
I can't hear it in my mind. I've got to go back and listen to it because I've always just thought of him as a staple of oldies radio. Oldies radio, you know, like never paid attention to those lyrics.
Printed page.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I guess maybe this is one part of the kind of campaign that's going on, the Let's Get Lyrical thing, which is the notion that, like, maybe, and I never, until you said Chuck Berry, I would have disagreed with it vehemently, but are lyrics undervalued in some way?
Definitely. I think people who enjoy music often take lyrics for granted. They'll say, oh, that's a great tune, or I love that song, but they won't often say, I love the words of that song, or I love that lyric, yet they're still benefiting from the lyric. They might love the lyric without ever becoming conscious of it. I think lyrics are taken for granted.
You know, I remember as a kid, the first thing I would do would be get the sleeve out and read.
Me too, but we're oddballs.
Really?
We're word lovers. We're wordy people. Most people aren't wordy.
And they don't look at the lyric sheets?
Nah.
Why? Why wouldn't they look? I tried to sing along from the very beginning, the first time that CD went on. I was like, all right, I'm going to sing along with this.
Just think, most people don't bother.
Which leads us to...
They may love them and benefit from the lyrics, but without thinking about it.
I'm really glad you said that, because I've had trouble kind of conceptualizing the notion that anybody wouldn't know...
Yeah.
Because you sing along, you know? Yeah. There's such an important part of it. All right, the last question. You know, like, worst lyric that you can think of. You know what it's like as a songwriter. You write that stupid thing and you're like, oh, man, maybe one of them has made it onto your records. Maybe you've managed to delete it. Is there anything that you still listen to on your own stuff that you cringe at? And if you don't want to answer that question, just in general, like, worst lyric that you could think of, one that it comes on the radio and you're like, oh, man, how did that person write that?
Do you know, if it's just someone who writes bad lyrics, I wouldn't even pay any notice. But when I hear a great lyricist put in a bad rhyme, that upsets me. I'll try and think of an example for you. I wonder if there are any Dylan ones where he really screwed it up.
I'm sure there's Dylan ones I can think of. I can't think of it, where he rhymes the same word with the word with the same word. He just doesn't even bother to create a rhyme.
Oh, he's probably doing that deliberately. I dislike rhymes where they'll rhyme, I've done it myself, it's very bad when you rhyme an N sound with an M sound. I think that's, I wouldn't do it now, but I've done it in the past. I've done it in the Hole of the Moon somewhere. You just stayed in your room you saw the whole of the moon, and that's cheating. An M and an N, it's just not okay.